Welcome to episode 107 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on December 28, 2018. This is a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life, where we discuss the topic or recent news related to Office 365 or Azure, and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. In this episode, Scott and I go over recent Office 365 news around OneNote, Teams, SharePoint, including Scott's favorite, the new Yammer web part, and OneDrive. Good morning, Scott. It is the week between Christmas and New Year's, and nothing is going on. So we decided we get on the computers together, I guess. I was going to say the phone, but we're not on the phone. And chat, the interwebs, which was invented by Al Gore, right?
Absolutely. In Florida.
I always wanted to get that clarified. And we were talking about coffee cups right before we recorded this. We both got new coffee cups for Christmas.
Yeah. Is yours fun? Mine's fun.
Mine is not fun, but mine keeps my coffee hot. Mine is sick.
Ah.
It's actually a sick coffee cup. It's funny.
No, mine is a Lego coffee cup, which is made out of plastic. And in the outside of the entire mug is little Lego studs, which then you can put all your pieces and parts on top of, which is really fun and nifty. But it does not necessarily keep your coffee as warm as you would like it to, so you just have to drink it fast. And then washing it is problematic because you have to take all the little Lego pieces that you stuck onto the cup off of the cup so that it can be cleaned. It's kind of the gift that keeps on giving.
Nice. Yes, mine is not nearly as practical. Mine was from my sister-in-law, but I just needed a good travel coffee cup. And now I've started using it in the office too, because it will keep my coffee hot for like 3 or 4 hours.
Yes, travel from downstairs to upstairs.
Yes, that is a long commute. No, I go co-work every once in a while, or when I go visit clients in the mornings and I want to take my coffee with me. But yes, that is mine. My Legos was the giant excavator. This thing is massive. It's like 2 feet long and it's motorized and it's cool. I'm in the middle of putting it together now. It's been my evening project for the last few nights.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, enough about Christmas presents. Oh, and you got a new puppy, which I would buy this for you, except that there's no way I can afford it. I saw it the other day for dogs that need a place to relax during the holidays or when there's fireworks. Have you seen this? Doghouse from Ford.
Oh, yes. The noise canceling doghouse.
Yes. So I think on top of the new puppy you got, you need a noise canceling doghouse for New Year's Eve, because who knows what a new puppy and New Year's Eve and fireworks are going to be like.
Yeah, no, hopefully I live far enough away from the fireworks that I'll be okay.
Got it. So you don't have too many there. They go off all around our house. There were people setting them off like a day or two ago at 12:45 a.m.
I pretty much live in an old folks community, and I've actually been debating with all my gray hair if I could pull off being under 40, but getting into a 55 plus community just to keep it even more calm.
I think you should do it.
Just to try it out.
Yes, that would be an interesting experiment. When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic, but sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudit. All right. So anyways, on with news. Since we talked about some Azure news last time, this time I took over the notes and came up with some of the Office 365 news that has been announced. Oh, it's probably been over the course of the last month or so that these different stories have come out, but with interviews and conferences and all that, we haven't really recorded much of a news show lately.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've absconded with the notes, so we might as well get into it.
We might as well.
What are we starting with? Yammer?
First one, Yammer?
No, I was kidding.
We ended with Yammer last time. We could pick up where we left off with Yammer. And the new Yammer web part. No, we're not starting with that, but I did put it in the notes for you. Custom tags are soon going to be available in OneNote.
Ah, yes. What's old is new again.
Yes. This is, and we were talking before, I can't remember. I've been on a Mac so long, I haven't had custom tags in a while. But we both had this recollection that custom tags were there originally back in like Outlook 2013, maybe 2010-ish, those versions.
Yeah, they were definitely there in 2016 in some form or another, but there were weird things. Like they weren't available online. They might be on the desktop. Like you said, you're on a Mac. They weren't on the Mac. And the experience, especially across device, could be a little weird or lacking.
Yeah. So they're coming everywhere now. OneNote for Windows 10, because they're getting rid of the OneNote desktop client on Windows and going to the App Store one only. So they'll be available there, be available on the Mac. The article does not mention web and mobile, but I'm only assuming with the way they're doing everything that tags will be there as well. And it looks like there hasn't been much of a change in the way they're implementing these. So right now you do have the built-in tags where you have tags for like to-dos and important and highlights and all those built-in tags where you essentially tag a line or a paragraph of text in your OneNote note with this tag. It's going to be the same way now, only you'll be able to create custom ones where you can tag a certain or tag certain text in your note. It's not the whole Evernote type-ish tagging where you tag an entire page, but you just tag those sections of text within your page. I suppose you could argue, well, if you only drop one tag and a little bit of text in your page, you're tagging the page. I'm on the fence on how I like this tagging feature. I like it when it comes to like to-do lists, but I don't like it when it comes to organization of my pages in OneNote.
Yeah, I think you've still got to do that organization in your head and build out those hierarchies. So what goes into a section? What goes into a page? When does it become a subpage? And how do you think about that and put it all together? This is really, like you said, it's line by line tagging. It is not page by page or section by section. Maybe they can add that stuff in the future. Who knows? This was a user voice response because the uproar of Microsoft taketh away, please bringeth back. Maybe somebody can put some stuff out there and have them add things like page and section tagging, which would be really good as well. Because then I think that would be far more Evernote-ish. Like that was really one of the best features about Evernote was the tagging at the page level like that.
Yep. No, I agree. And I prefer to organize my notes by tagging pages rather than this whole notebook thing. And I think part of it is with SharePoint and the whole metadata and grouping and filtering by your metadata or essentially by tags when you put files in SharePoint, I've just really gotten used to that whole mindset of let's just make it all flat and let's tag it, let's add metadata to it, and let's group and sort and filter by that, because then technically a note can fall into two or three groups, or you have a little bit more fluidity in how you organize things, because there's certain maybe blog posts or notes that I have for clients that I may store in there that maybe I want it stored with a client because it's related to something I worked on for them, but I also want it stored a little more generically when I'm going back and trying to find it later. The OneNote structure doesn't work for that. So that's, again, where I'd love those page tags, but at least having these custom tags, it is a step in the right direction. And they are going to also let you do some searching, at least based on this little GIF or GIF, however you prefer to pronounce it, that's on the blog post, where they do show you searching and your ability to say, okay, now just go search the tags for this content. So hopefully that'll at least help with some of that findability, searchability, a little bit of organizational structure there just from a pure search perspective.
Yeah, it's good to have options and nice to see improvements. Like you mentioned, there is no call out for the web experience here. So this is specifically called out for OneNote for Windows 10 and OneNote for Mac. And when I say OneNote for Windows 10, that is the UWP app that is in the Microsoft Store. So it's not even like the full-up OneNote client.
Yeah, which that full-up, do you know when that full-up OneNote client is going away? I thought they made an announcement that was going to go away and it was only going to be UWA, the Unified Windows app?
Yes.
Got to keep my acronym straight. I thought that was going to be the only client going forward.
They have a support article out there and I would have to see if I can dig it up. Yeah. OneNote 2016 is missing after installing Office 2019 or Office 365. So that is the default behavior. So really the issue becomes if you install Office 2019 or Office 365, so click to run installation on Windows 10, it will look like Windows 2016 or OneNote 2016 rather is missing in that case. What you do have to do is go back and download OneNote 2016 again, and then just reinstall it and get it to where it needs to be, which is kind of annoying. But OneNote for Windows 10 is the path forward in the way of the future.
Got it.
Opsgility is your cloud enablement partner to help guide your organization through all phases of cloud migration and adoption. As the leading global brand for enabling the Microsoft Cloud, their Microsoft MVP and multi-certified cloud solutions architect team has authored over 20 mock courses, the Microsoft Pressbook Implementing Azure Solutions 7533, and several Microsoft Cloud Practice Playbooks for Microsoft partners. Opsgility is the official learning partner for Microsoft, GitHub, Chef, Puppet, Databricks, Ansible, Red Hat, and many more technologies across the cloud ecosystem. Learn more about their advisory services and how they can help you reach and exceed your 2019 transformation goals at www.opsgility.com/home/advisory services.
All right. So, more news. Teams. There's always Teams news.
There is. I mean, just imagine, someday it will have feature parity with Skype.
Yeah. But it does already. Never mind. I will not start down that road of negativity on my feature parity as much as I really want to, because it drives me nuts. But there are some other new features that are coming. A couple calling features. They're bringing some call stuff in there, and then some admin features and third-party integration. So we'll dive into some of these. So first of these is the calling feature. So as Microsoft keeps rolling out the phone system, calling within Teams and trying to really create an enterprise voice system within that Office 365 environment, they're adding some more features. So they added some group call pickup and shared line appearance, which both of these are different ways to make a phone ring in a different place. So the group call pickup is essentially like a distribution group for phone calls.
Yeah, just a hunt group. Yep.
Right. So you can put maybe all your help desk staff in one group. And when someone calls the number for that group, all of the help desk staff, their phones ring, any one of them can pick it up and the phone will stop ringing. They'll take the call. Pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Shared line appearance is a delegated phone number. So this, again, is going back to Exchange because everybody knows it. Just like you could delegate someone to send on behalf of and manage your email for you, now you can delegate someone to answer a call on your behalf. So again, phone call comes in, more executives that maybe they have an administrative assistant, administrative professional. I don't know what the politically correct term is anymore. But they can now have that delegated access to answer the executive's phone call, take that phone call on their behalf. So another just nifty feature, just continuing to add them in there, connect to call park. So this is just essentially retrieving calls that you park on Teams. You answer it, park the call, go tell somebody, hey, you got a phone call, dial this pin, pick it up, good to go. So those are a couple of those. Oh, location-based routing too. This one was interesting. And I don't know exactly how this one works, but it essentially puts some restrictions in there on how calls can route between VoIP endpoints based on location. So this is more of the compliance, local regulations. I think it's more the geolocation type stuff where for certain compliancy and restrictions, you may not be able to route calls to different parts of the world. And this just helps you go in and kind of restrict how that routing works.
Yeah, so it's just using authorization rules. So it's based on the user's policy. So a policy associated with the user. And then their usage location in the metadata associated with that user in Office 365. So it's kind of a combination of those two things to put it all together.
Yeah, another one that actually caught me off guard. I missed this announcement or got way behind on my blog posts. But they changed the Microsoft Teams administrator roles in Office 365 now. So I believe there used to just be one, or it was all bundled in with Skype for Business. There are now actually four different admin roles just for Microsoft Teams. So this is another one. I like how they added some granularity here. I know I've run into it before with SharePoint where it's like, you know what, I don't really want them to have be a full SharePoint admin, but I want to give them some certain admin roles. Exchange does this really well, where there's all kinds of different roles within Exchange. So now within Teams, you have a Teams service administrator, a communication administrator, a communication support engineer, and a communication support specialist. So all four of these roles have slightly different permission levels in terms of what they're allowed to do. The administrator, exactly what it sounds. That's that full admin. They can manage Teams, Office 365 groups, access to the Teams, Skype for Business Admin Center, full admin access across Teams. When you get into some of the communication administrators and support engineers, they really lock those down to just working with calling functionality, with meetings, with some of the call analytics tools.
They're more focused on kind of UCS features there. So the admin's probably the most interesting one because it opens up, again, one of these cross-functional roles, right? Where you have Teams as a workload, but Teams as a workload consumes a bunch of other workloads. I'd have to get in there and play around with that one just because Groups is wider than just Teams, right? It's got SharePoint and all the other stuff behind it as well. So it'd be interesting to see kind of what you can pull off and what the hooks are there and how they figured all that out.
Right. I would imagine with this one, it's, again, it says creating and managing. I would imagine it would still adhere to that policy you can set around groups where only certain AD users can create groups, that this wouldn't override that. But like you said, behind the scenes, they're still giving you the ability then to, because at that point in time, as a Teams administrator, you can create that shared mailbox for the group. You're creating the SharePoint site for the group. It is more than just a team. And the other ones I think are good too, because sometimes your phone people aren't necessarily that full-blown Teams person. They aren't working with SharePoint and groups and all the features of Teams. I feel like as they get more enterprise voice stuff in here, you may have that need for, hey, we just have a voice person, especially if you're dealing with hybrid, with all the various aspects that can come with voice, where they need access to go in and work with phone numbers and conference bridges and number assignments and routing, but they don't necessarily need all of that full-blown Teams administrative power. And there's also PowerShell. So along with these PowerShell commandlets for the various roles. So go check this out and just be aware of it too as you go in and start assigning admin roles with Teams, that there are some different roles now, some new roles. If you've already set them up and you want to go limit them some more, go in and check these out. Maybe there are some permissions you can take away, you can tweak to just make that environment a little bit more secure.
Yeah. And, you know, just to call it out, so roles, these are Azure Active Directory roles. So they can be managed over there natively. You know, if you're doing PIM or things like that, and, you know, you can continue to do that with these roles and role assignments as well.
Yeah. Any other Teams?
A bunch of third party stuff, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, there's this Teams lifecycle.
Well, that's
37 graph APIs now.
Yeah,
for Teams.
That's all graph API. That's your developer friends.
Yeah, if you're my developer friends listening to this, go look at the graph API. No, they just added some stuff in there that lets you really tweak the Teams on provisioning. So if you are doing some provisioning and you want to configure settings, add channels, tabs, apps, manage that lifecycle where you do archive or delete a team, adding members and owners, a bunch of functionality is now surfaced within that graph API. So you can go take a look at that and really customize that whole life cycle from creation to archival or deletion of the team.
Excellent.
Yes. Mover is a cloud migration company that specializes in moving your company's files from file servers or cloud storage like Box, Dropbox, and Google into Office 365. Their patented technology makes Mover the fastest OneDrive file migrator in the world. Moving dozens of terabytes of data a day is a breeze. Use Mover's free, industry-leading migration guides or ask for a managed migration and they'll take the lead. With Mover, all your data is secure and intact. Running completely behind the scenes, you don't lose time, money, or hair while you transfer. Scan, plan, migrate, report. Migrations that don't suck. With Mover, visit mover.io for more info. SharePoint news. This is the one you were waiting for.
Yes, just regale me with...
Did you know there's a new Yammer web part?
I've heard about this Yammer thing you keep talking about.
Yammer. We should make a new product called Yammer. No, and this wasn't the only one. There are some new web parts available in SharePoint Online, specifically for the modern UI. So I actually went in and played with some of these because some of them are rather interesting. The first one is Yammer Conversations. Yeah, we don't have to talk about it. It's a new web part for conversations in Yammer.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how many versions of a Yammer embed we can have before they finally just say, like, here's the definitive one.
Developers need jobs too.
Yes, I guess so.
Yeah, go look at the blog post if you actually use Yammer Conversations in a web part. It's just a new way to embed Yammer conversations in a modern SharePoint page.
Woohoo!
Yay! My recent documents, my frequent sites, a couple new web parts, more on the personalization side, as indicated by my at the beginning of it. This allows you to show your recent documents, recent sites you visited within a SharePoint site. So think of like that SharePoint homepage that you go to. If you go click on the waffle and you click SharePoint and it says sites I've recently visited, I think it does show recent documents there too. Now you can also put a web part that shows these recent documents and pages right on a web part page.
These are always the intranet kind of driven things, you know, where we used to, or at least I used to build web parts like this and put kind of custom search queries and things together for customers way back in the day when I used to be a developer. And we would just have to run this stuff up consistently. And now it's just there out of the box. So yay, intranets are getting easier.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like this is scoped to a specific site for like the My Recent Documents, or obviously My Recent Sites would be across your whole environment. This looks like it's recent documents as well from across the entire SharePoint environment. A stream web part, you can now do some different things with channels, galleries, embedding your stream videos right on your page. And I think, was it in this article or did I see someone talking about it? I think it was on Twitter. I saw that this web part also works, I believe, on the mobile SharePoint app. If you go in and add this web part to a page and then go open that site in SharePoint, the web part still works. You can play your videos, all of that. Or again, they do have it does say on this page. It's the mobile app. And again, that stream mobile app should be coming too for watching stream videos there. YouTube embed. Yay, go embed a YouTube video to compete with stream. Countdown timers.
Maybe you wouldn't be surprised, but you know, intranet kind of news-driven things. Awesome.
Yep. These are the ones I was curious and looking at. So code snippet. It says developers are authors too.
Aren't they though?
They author in their own language. This web part lets you embed code on your modern page. So if you want to share code, again, more of a collaboration site with developers, and you want to put a code snippet on one of your pages, you can do that. They added that web part, and they added a markdown web part. This is the one I was looking for, wanting to get to. This one was interesting because I played with this. So it is a web part that lets you author your content in markdown. So hashes for your headers, your dashes, bullets. So if you're used to writing in Markdown and you want to author a page in Markdown, this works great. However, one thing I found is that it is only Markdown. So if you've written Markdown before, a lot of times you can kind of flip back and forth between Markdown and HTML, because at the end of the day,
that's the whole point of Markdown.
Right. Because so the one I use the most is links. I maybe want to add a target, like the target blank to my link. Mm-hmm. You can't do that with Markdown. You have to actually write out your link then in HTML. This Markdown web part doesn't render HTML as HTML. It actually renders it as plain text. So if you go write some Markdown and then you get to a link and you do your less than href equals blah, 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 and then publish it, all the Markdown gets translated properly and displays correctly. But then your HTML shows less than href equals blah, 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 instead of actually being interpreted as HTML.
And that's how you know that web part was written by someone who has actually never had to use Markdown in their life before. All they did was build the parser.
Yeah, I was kind of excited because I'm like, oh, so does this mean now you can do, like, if you want to add some rich HTML within your page? Because that's one part that's missing now is you can't, there's no HTML web part to just write straight HTML and put it in a modern page. It's like, oh, Markdown web part, that should be able to do it if I want to put HTML stuff in there and all that. Yeah, it didn't work so well.
That's a rough one. I wouldn't be able to use it that way. Because I'm like you. Like, I spend probably, oh, like 50% of my day in Markdown, whether it's across GitHub and doing readmes, or even the organization I work for, like all the labs we do are written in Markdown. So tons and tons, and we pretty much don't use Word. Like, everything we do is GitHub and GitHub flavored Markdown, which is its own beast as well, right? You know, there's not just Markdown, there's Common Mark, and there's, you know, the original like Gruber flavored right. Markdown. It is a very wide ecosystem of stuff. So a little bit rough that it does not render the right way. That one would frustrate me.
Yeah, hopefully they'll go in and fix it and somebody will call them out on it. Or
hey, you just did.
Maybe I should go open a user voice. I did. Microsoft, if you're listening, can you please fix the Markdown web part? So that's that. Web part connections are coming back with the SPFX update too. This is a little bit more developer-y one. But I won't say I used this a ton when they had web part connections and the other ones, but there were cases where I would use connections to tie web parts together, pass data back and forth between web parts. And with modern UI, it went away. There is an update to the SharePoint framework that is going to bring those connections back to leverage connections to let web parts interact and pass data back and forth between each other.
Yep. So that's all SPFX 1.7. That was actually released back in November. So hopefully folks have gotten on board the tooling update train and have started to see a little bit about what's going on there. But it's been kicking around and kind of just the way forward.
Yep. Most definitely. And then there's some updates. We'll sneak one more in here because it's kind of tied to this with OneDrive and some updates to the UI leveraging Fluent. So not only are we getting new icons, which I got my stickers the other day. I got new OneDrive and SharePoint stickers now.
Did you request stickers from Omar?
I did. So thank you, Omar, if you're listening. I appreciate the stickers. If other people want stickers, we can go see. I think he still has that link out there where you can go fill out a little Microsoft Forms form, put in your name, address, and he might mail you some stickers. But back to Fluent updates. They are giving the OneDrive UI a little bit of an overhaul. I think this is eventually going to come across the whole Office stack.
Yeah, this will be the whole stack, right? It wasn't just icons that are changing. It is applications and every experience. Desktop experience, mobile experience, web experiences. And you're starting to see some of that, right? We saw Outlook on mobile update. They've talked about the new designs for icons. Hopefully everybody has been on a more current release channel for like Click to Run. So you're all starting to see the flatter buttons and things that exist inside of ribbons, inside of Office on the desktop now. You got dark mode on the Mac. There's just all sorts of stuff that comes as they kind of keep up this crazy cadence.
Yeah, it's fun to keep up with. So it's all coming to OneDrive too, trying to, again, just get a kind of that unified design across web, desktop, mobile, everything. So there's a blog article out here about it, about some new capabilities. It also sounds like with this, we're going to get full fidelity. This was kind of buried in here in the Fluent Design article, was full fidelity shared libraries in OneDrive, where you're going to be able to start doing stuff with metadata, again, in OneDrive. I don't know if people have noticed. I used to do stuff with metadata, again, all the time in OneDrive because I love tagging. You're going to be able to bring back metadata, tagging, custom columns in OneDrive so you can sort, group by your metadata, add attention view so you can do those highlights if metadata is missing. So really bringing more of that richer document library type functionality back into your OneDrive library.
Yep. All the column formatting and everything else as well. So it's going to be not just kind of OneDrive itself, but the actual views within OneDrive are going to support all that.
Yep. Which is nifty. And this is one that I didn't put in our notes. I can't remember if we talked about it, but they're also adding some column formatting functionality now where you don't have to write JSON to format your columns. It'll just be a point and click GUI type thing. So you're not going to get the crazy functionality that you get by writing JSON, but you can now at least do some highlighting, some formatting without having to write the fancy code. Give those end users a little bit more ability to give some custom colors, some callouts on their column formatting without having to learn JSON to do it.
Yeah, I'll have to dig up the blog article for that one because all the stuff on Docs still talks about, you know, the JSON formatters.
Yeah, and they used a slightly different terminology. They call it something slightly different than column formatting. It was like column prettification. It was not column prettification, but I will find it.
Yeah. New no-code solutions. I found it.
Yes. There you go. All right. And with that, should we call it a wrap for today's episode?
Yeah, let's do it. I got to go let this new puppy outside in case you haven't heard it whining in the background the entire time.
Yes, I have heard. Go let the puppy out before you have a mess to clean up.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott. If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.